I was supposed to tell this story about how Kane had this girlfriend that he killed in a car crash. And it was just insane. And it ends up, I'm at a funeral home with a dummy in a coffin.
Oh, my God.
With Kane's mask on, pretending I'm Kane. I'm on top of the coffin having mock sex with this mannequin.
Oh, my God, no.
And
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. And Vince is yelling at me, God damn it, do it harder. Make more noise and stuff. It's got to be over the top.
I really did. I screwed your brains out.
So Charlotte's getting a lot of shit right now. Have you seen this?
I have not. I'm not really seeing much of wrestling Twitter since the Rumble last night.
When she gets eliminated, she's smiling and laughing. Like, she shouldn't be doing that in character. And everybody's like, well, she's smiling and laughing because IRL, she's going to be in the main event at WrestleMania. And she knows it, so it doesn't even matter.
So, yeah, so take that.
That's weird, though. For somebody who's been in the business as long as she's been in the business and then – second generation, all that, not selling it in some way, shape, or form seems odd to me.
It seemed like she's been doing a lot of non-selling lately. But the odd thing about it is, I definitely noticed that last night.
Yeah.
But I didn't really think of it as her not selling. I thought of it as her just being, you know, like, ha, 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 y'all got me that time. Okay. Y'all want to play that way? Y'all want to play that way? I'll get you later. You know, we'll play. That's how I took it, but. You know, I guess everybody looks at it differently.
I think you'd see it that way. Do you think maybe that she's – is it possible that she's losing some interest in wrestling and stuff like that?
Of course. Of course it's possible.
After a while –
I mean, there's been – I mean, you know, we've – I think you and I, if nobody else has, you and I have pretty much like stamped her – life in WWE as it went along, and the whole Reed situation, and the whole her dad situations that have come up over however long she's been in WWE. Now there's some, you know, seems like some drama somewhere, somehow, you know, all the time. So all that's been chronicled by us. So we kind of have kept up with it. But right now, I just think, I don't know what they're doing. I can't tell if it's booking. I can't tell if it's her just not giving a shit. I can't tell if it's both. I can't tell, but something's not right. You know what I'm saying? I just can't put my finger on it.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it would be basically the state of the world as it is with the pandemic and everything. It would be pretty easy for anybody to get in kind of a fucked up state of mind.
Sure.
Right. I mean, it was like you're just kind of, and things aren't right. And then all of a sudden you're kind of off kilter. I mean, you could see how you could be demotivated or unmotivated with all that shit.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not even knocking her if that's the case.
Even if you're at the highest level like she is, it would be kind of difficult. And then they, you know, it's like, oh, God, they're bringing dad back again. And dad and I are supposed to be fighting. You know, eye roll. You could see how that would be. It would not be the easiest thing in the world to just kind of go along. And eventually, before you know it, you're kind of going through the motions. I mean, yeah, you're still eating right. And, yeah, you're still working out and shit. But you're just like, yeah, it's just so blah, right?
Right. But, you know, as far as the whole dad thing goes, I kind of get that. But that should be vanquished away with the immediate thought of, well, yeah, you know, if it wasn't for my dad, I probably wouldn't be here right now. So, you know, I'll do this. So that's just me. But.
Well, and you know what I thought? And this is pretty evil, but I can go ahead and say it since I'm on a podcast. If it wasn't for my dad, my brother might still be alive. That'd be the other thing that you might be thinking, too.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, pal.
Touche, dude. I don't know what to. Yeah,
it's an awful thing to say.
Can't come back from that one.
It's not entirely 100% fair, but you know, if that thought hadn't gone through her mind at least once during her life, I wouldn't be terribly surprised.
I can't. I couldn't believe it wouldn't have at some point.
WWE has formally announced the hiring of Christine Lubrano as the company's senior vice president of creating writing operations, a.k.a. the shittiest job in the world. Lubrano will be responsible for overseeing all strategic operations for the company's creative writing division and report to Brad Bloom, WWE executive vice president in charge of operations, or at least he is this week. In her new role, Lubrano will be charged with developing and leading a team of writers for WWE's weekly flagship programs, Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown. She will oversee long-term planning for the creative writing team and manage its operations in collaboration with executive producer Bruce Pritchard, who will try to cut her off at the knees every time he possibly can. WWE had welcomed Lubrano to the company via a post in their career's Twitter account in January. Lubrano had launched Lubrano Media in 2019. She spent 18 years at IFC prior to that. That's hard to believe. That's not a career path you see a lot.
18 years.
The independent film channel straight to World Wrestling Entertainment.
You know, for 18 years?
Yeah, that's what she does.
God. And then goes to WWE. That is kind of odd.
Yeah, the first thing you know, you're holding seminars on why Lily Taylor is the greatest independent film star of all time. And then the next thing you know, you're trying to figure out why Bruce Pritchard's farts smell like liver. And then you're wondering, what did I do with my life?
What went wrong?
Lubrano's previous roles at IFC included her serving as VP of current programming and VP of unscripted series, documentaries, and live events. So there's that. We have not met at this space since the announcement that the WWE Network is headed over to Peacock. NBC, Universal, Comcast, whatever you want to call it, has decided that they are going to buy the WWE Network and migrate everything over to Peacock. You will be invited to spend $5 a month for the not premium service of Peacock, in which you see commercials and shit with your programming. If you want to go ahead and pay $10 like you were monthly for the WWE Network, you can go ahead and forego all of the commercials. And then, in addition to getting all of the WWE Network programming, you'll get all of the stuff that Peacock has as well, including movies and series and shit like that. You are already a Peacock person. You've already sampled.
Yes. Yeah, I like it.
And you like it?
I like it just because of the fact that it has every Saturday Night Live you could ever want to see from 1975 on up to now.
That's a winner. I believe this is why Nick Khan was brought on board, the guy from, I think it was CAA, I believe is what he was from.
I can't remember.
They brought him on board a few months ago. And this is why you bring a Nick Khan on board, is to go ahead and get him involved with this. And the reports are that it's $1 billion over a period of, 4 years or whatever. So this will kind of help replace some of the blood money they're not getting from Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's good. We didn't want that to completely go away.
It's very interesting with all of the machinations that are going on Wall Street with the GameStop fiasco and all that stuff, how there are a series of people who are analysts who haven't figured out how awful the WWE is as a stock. Dave Meltzer, I keep hearing him say that he thinks the stock is underpriced. That's what he
underpriced.
Says. He can't say it, but he said he doesn't know why it's at this level and it should be more. This sort of thing is always built into the stock. Let me see what we're looking at right now. I personally believe that part of the problem, again, is there's, as I've said on this podcast before, there's not really a good story to tell as far as revenue for this company. Yes, you're going to get this money going forward from NBC Universal to put the stuff on Peacock, and that's fine. But when that next contract comes up from the 21st for SmackDown on Friday nights on the Fox Television Network, I don't think they're looking at getting the same $1 billion that they got when they signed that thing.
How could they? How could they, dude?
That's going to happen. So Wall Street is going to be like, here's what could happen in the real world. You would go, all right, you don't have to give us $1 billion. Why don't you just give us $750 million? And on Wall Street, that's disastrous. If you start telling that story to analysts, stock starts tanking, it goes into shitter, you're dead. I personally think one of the stories that they've completely missed as far as the analysts go for the stock was how awful that 2K thing was with their video game and how that video game revenue is not coming in at all and how they just basically threw up the white flag on that. And I don't know why the management team and the stock is not being punished in a major way for just shitting the bed on that one entirely. If for example, and I know that the National Football League is not a publicly traded company. If the National Football League somehow said, we're going to fuck up Madden and just not have it from now on, how long would it take for the commissioner to be voted out and then flogged by every owner in the league? How long would that take? 4 seconds? Five?
Oh, maybe, if that long.
It stuns me, and I understand that the 2K stuff was not bringing in at all the kind of revenue that Madden was. Let's see what this we're looking at for this. The stock is currently traveling, is currently trading rather at $57 as we record this. Let's see what the year to date looks like. Well, it's on a nice trajectory, starting in from January. Let's look for the 1 year from last year. There we go. Now we're going to tell the story. It looks to be. Well, it's up about 20% over the high, which would have been around March of last year. And if we look at, though, the highs from a couple of years ago, that's where you're going to see some real problems. The all-time high for the stock over the past, I think this is the all-time high, was around $96.73. So we're at 57 now, not too far from half of that. It's not good, but the entire stock market in and of itself has had some issues. Obviously, we've had an economy that's in the shitter because, you know, Joe Biden's trying to kill us all and destroy.
Yeah, damn him.
Driving gas prices up and letting our Chinese overlords come in.
Yeah, god that's dang. Insane. Why didn't we stop him?
I don't understand. Why isn't it being reported?
Why isn't CNN doing a piece on this?
Yeah, $96. $90 and
so what caused it to tank? Just the content, basically? Happened?
I think we had some of the things that have caused the stock not to do well is the fact that they don't have any revenue coming in from the house shows, obviously. That's something that happened. The overall market indicators anyway are just that people are spending less money on stuff like that. I would say that merch sales are probably down. I just don't feel there's a good story to tell. The huge payday that they would get from WrestleMania, that sort of revenue obviously wasn't realized this year. It's last year. And I still think it's a pipe dream if they're going to get 30,000 people in that stadium. But again, the state of Florida is so fucked up, they may end up doing that. Let me see what it was trading at. God, this stock was just lagging.
Dude, I don't know if you watched any of the Tennessee-Kansas game, basketball game. Was it this weekend?
I did not.
Saturday night, maybe. Well, the reason I'm saying this is because it was at Tennessee, and there were so many people in that damn arena. It was I guess Tennessee just doesn't give a rat's ass.
They don't.
That's between that and the Titans game, you know. And,
oh my God, it's terrible. Let me look at you go back to 9 years ago, almost March 1st of 2012. This stock was trading at $8.87. I mean, just lagging like a son of a bitch. It spikes in 2014 to $29. It goes right back down. I'm trying to think of a commensurate level. Oh, here we go. Last time it was in this range would have been May 1st of 2018. There just aren't any good stories to tell business-wise for this company. And I still think that they feel I still think that the street is not entirely comfortable with the genius Vince McMahon. I think he's living off his reputation from 1986 for sure. But I also think they've seen him shit the bed with the XFL on the relaunch. They've seen him fire those executives in a fit of pique. They've seen none of the financials look good. And I don't see how they can continue to prop it up. I don't think the stock is underpriced. I think I can make an argument for the stock being overpriced right now. There was some guidance today from one of the government entities, a budget office or something, saying that there could be a robust recovery and we could be back to pre-pandemic levels by the middle of the summer. And I don't know exactly what the research is on that and all that stuff. It's still, let's be completely honest, house show business was the shits before any of this started. And I don't know that people will be running out to get in arenas to see Bray Wyatt against whatever. I don't know if that's going to be the big deal that anybody wants to see, because the overwhelming problem with this company right now is they don't have any stars and they're not creating new stars.
Well, okay, you're right. And I think that was going on before the pandemic, but the pandemic certainly made it a whole lot worse as far as trying to do that with no audience there.
And although we said, I said it like five times last night, I cannot wait till they get people back in the stands so that they can cheer Roman Reigns being. I cannot wait, because we said that was going to happen 5 years ago, that they would not cheer him when he was a good guy, but the minute they turned him into a heel, he was going to get cheered, right?
Right.
That's exactly what has happened. That's what's going to happen. I can't wait for them to hear 10,000 people cheering for this guy and loving the fact that he's a heel, and then trying to figure out some way to turn him back into a face.
Well,
I don't know if the current problem is, once the children's hospital is open back up and once Make-A-Wish gets rolling again, to turn him back into a face. I don't know. I couldn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't see. I honestly, dude, I just don't see. And I know you said 10,000, just kind of throwing a number out there. Yes, but
that's right.
I don't really see anything right now for a while. I don't think they have to worry about that for a while. I think what you're seeing in AEW on Dynamite, the amount of people in those stands, that might be the peak we're looking at right now. If WWE ever wants to try to do that, go that route instead of trying to hold out and, you know, pack the stands or whatever they're doing, which, you know, that's fine. You know, I'm okay with or without fans at this point. I'm with you, though, on the fact about I'm back to missing fans again, not just the Roman Reigns thing, because that would be fun, but I think I'm back to missing fans in the audience again, because not just that, I think I'm starting to think, like when we were talking last night during the Rumble about McIntyre and how he's kind of gotten the shaft.
Through
no, you know, fault of his own, just because of circumstances.
He may be the greatest victim of all of this in terms of like not having fans in the stands.
It's hard to think of anybody else that's had it any worse, you know, considering everything he's had to deal with, and including getting the shit, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think I'm back to wanting to see fans again, because I think some people like that are getting shit at, and I don't think it's just him. I think there's some other people. I think that if we had fans in the stands, that I think they would be elevated more. And I'll give you, for instance, man, I think, and we probably said this before over the years too, but I read that Cesaro's contract is supposedly coming up right after WrestleMania, which, you know, a couple of months. So he's 40, right at 40 years old, I guess.
Right.
I mean, what are you going to do with him after? I mean, he's not getting any younger. They've already ruined him, basically. Are they going to all of a sudden push him now? No. So, I mean, if he goes to AEW, is he, you know, what's going to happen there? I mean, he'll probably get a good pop, you know, when he first gets there, just because it's something new, and he pulled one on WWE, and here he is going to get a fresh start, and then he'll get lost in the sauce, just like kind of Rusev has, you know?
Exactly. He's another Miro waiting to happen.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I just feel sorry for folks like that. I think maybe if audiences were there, they can, you know, some weird something will happen along the way where they'll start cheering some random wrestler like a Cesaro, you know, trying to kind of get behind them and maybe get the underdog thing going or what, you know, whatever, the underappreciated thing going. So, I don't know. I do miss the audience. That's just my point. I think I've gone from missing them to getting them, you know, being okay with it, but now I'm kind of missing them again. But
the first time you hear a bunch of jerks chanting, "This is awesome," and you're going to be like, "Oh, I wish we were back to no audience."
Well, they have that piped in already, so we do still hear it, you know.
When you hear some spontaneous jerks doing that.
Oh, yeah, and live there, yes, you're right.
Funny you say that, because I was listening to one of the classic episodes of Stone Cold Steve Austin, and Wade Keller from The Torch was on, and they were talking about the whole Daniel Bryan buildup, I think going up to WrestleMania 30, and how they were – it was that Royal Rumble in 2015 where Reigns won in Philadelphia. He got booed. The Rock got booed. And he was saying that Vince and the executive team were trying to find out a way – to ignore what their ears were hearing about people popping for Daniel Bryan and lifting him up and make him into a thing. That's what they were attempting to do, and they were unable to do it.
Mm-hmm. Was that the, now that wasn't the year that Bryan won. Was that when Bryan was against Rock, right?
I think that was the WrestleMania 30, and that was the one where he had to wrestle Triple H first.
That's right.
And then eventually he had to go out and win the big championship, and that they finally figured it. And I think that was the same year that Punk quit, because if Punk hadn't quit, they wouldn't have ended up pushing Bryan quite as much as they did. So all that shit happened. Having said all that, what did you think of the Royal Rumble?
Ah, man, I don't know. It was okay. I wasn't thrilled with it. I like the Rumble itself. That might be my favorite overall event WWE has. I think I just like the mystery of like the entrance each time, you know, all that stuff.
And we got Carlito.
Carlito, which is, you know, okay.
Jillian, which was odd.
Jillian, that was odd. That was just way strange.
And Tori. We got Tori.
Got a little Tori. That wasn't odd.
That was fantastic.
But I don't know. I like the Bianca outcome. I think that was great. I'm a little suspect on the other one, though, of the men.
That was, to me, the positive of the night was the Bianca push and the brevity of the Drew McIntyre Goldberg match. I thought was fine.
I think they did that one as about as best as they could do it.
My expectations for the Royal Rumble were pretty low, and they were able to meet my expectations. Basically, is what happened.
I agree, man. That's pretty much the way I stand. It just met expectations. I wasn't overly thrilled, and I wasn't, you know, completely disgusted or anything.
Right.
The only thing I have been thinking about the Edge victory, and I was okay with it last night when it first happened and everything.
I was more underwhelmed with it.
You were definitely, you're like, oh shit. And I was like, okay,
this guy doing? What are we doing?
And I'm like, well, you know, and I'm thinking, I want to ride back to the house last night. I was like, I wonder why he's down on Edge. And I'm like, okay, you know, he probably is taking away somebody's spot that probably should be deserving of being in a WrestleMania, like a Bianca Belair, you know, on the men's side, somebody that can get a push, like a Cesaro or somebody like that, somebody out of the blue. I think that's what I like, and that's what I would want. But I think that's the main thing I think that bothers me is, you know, Edge, let him come back, you know, and if he wants to come back and be on the roster, let him start up a feud with somebody besides Randy Orton. Let him even go for a belt, but don't make it into a WrestleMania thing. That should be just for. And I think and Edge ought to know this. You know, he's been there. He's been there, done that. And I think he understands the business enough to know that. I think he should think about stuff like that instead of I don't know. I mean, maybe he does. I don't know. I just don't see what he's getting out of this, other than possibly paralyzed for life or something. Well, you know,
he seems to be okay as far as the health and stuff like that. And let me be clear. I don't really have a problem, and I don't really necessarily agree with the argument of he's stealing somebody else's spot. If you can convince me that somebody who's not a full-timer can come in and they can create an attraction and get eyeballs to the product that wouldn't be there otherwise, then I'm okay with whoever coming in. And I don't necessarily even agree with the you're taking the spot from somebody. I also think there's a fundamental disagreement with the business for people who make that argument. And I don't have a problem with that. I don't see where he adds that much to the mix. And I feel like the whole thing with Orton last year and how they kind of were able to I think that kind of took away from some of the luster. And I don't see this as being a great story that they're telling for him as being in the main event for WrestleMania.
That's the thing, man. Let me try to fix what I said about taking somebody's spot.
Yeah.
Again, I don't mean on the roster. I like Edge. I like seeing him. I'm glad he's back. God bless him. I'm glad he's on the roster. My problem is on the WrestleMania main event, which I guess is going to be the main event. I'm assuming it's going to be the main event. You're taking somebody. I mean, how long is he going to be around, really? Exactly. You know? So, I mean, be, you know, have a match at WrestleMania. You know, I'm not even problem with that, but winning the Rumble and then having a, and the problem with that, and honestly, I really wouldn't have a problem with this if it wasn't, if he had just come back, right? If he had just come back, this was his first Rumble, and he comes back and he wins it, and it's like, oh my God, you know, it's the underdog story of the year, the comeback story of the year and stuff. They could build that up, man, and that's fine, even though I don't know. It's just him and Daniel Bryan, people like that. I'm just a little hesitant on watching him perform sometimes. Just sometimes they get those, like last night, that damn lariat that Edge took from, I forgot who it was, that just clotheslined the shit out of him. And I'm like, oh, you know. Other than that, I'm glad he's back, man. I don't get me wrong, but I just and have a match on WrestleMania. But the thing about it is they've already been through the – He's the big comeback story, you know. He was on the edge of you know, complete retirement, never coming back again. But he comes back, you know, a great comeback story. But see, they've already played that. You can't do that again. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
I don't see the story as being like this great redemptive story and stuff.
Yeah, he's been world champ before. It's not like he's never won the title, you know.
And who's he going to go against? Is he going against Drew? Who's he going against?
You're right. I mean, okay. I'm gonna reserve a little bit. I'm gonna hold a little bit back here for who it might be against. If they can make it to where whoever it's against, but take don't. I don't want to hear the sob story. You know what we heard with Orton. If they could turn this into something with whoever he's up against, but I just don't see it with the people that are champs right now. Do you?
I don't see
how they could do it.
I don't see what they're doing unless I can't see anything. And it's like, I don't see him like, oh, there's going to be a match with Undertaker or something like that. I don't, what is that about?
To me, it's almost as dumb as the whole Goldberg Drew McIntyre thing. I mean, that was just dumb. I don't know. I just don't get that. I mean, do they really think? I mean, are we just the ones that are blind to this? Are they really that hot of a commodity out there?
No, because it's not affecting the bottom line at all. Again, the geniuses who have this territory and good, you know, they're the best, all that shit. They're not hitting home runs with this stuff. They're not winning with this stuff at all. It's not happening at all. I don't get it at all. I don't know what's going on with those guys. But I don't see that Edge winning the Royal Rumble is a great story. Now, Bianca Belair winning is great. That's an excellent story. The WWE documentary on her, The Chronicle, is fantastic. She was a great athlete growing up and stuff, and then she eventually gets a scholarship to the University of South Carolina, runs track there and stuff. But she ends up being bulimic, which I think is very interesting. It's something like Lexi went through as well. He ends up going back home to Knoxville, dropping out of school after going to several places and getting hurt. And then she starts on this great comeback thing, and you can see that she did some powerlifting and stuff. That's why she was able to lift up Otis like she was.
Yeah.
Even though
that was impressive as hell.
I would still say that the majority of her strength comes from that lower body, from those glutes and those thighs. Holy shit. That's why she's able to – she can lift up a freaking truck or something like that. And Mark Henry was the one who actually saw her and said, you ought to try this, and was able to kind of lift her along. So that's another great story. By the way, just prepare yourself for the painful Black History Month shit on Raw if you're going to watch tonight. That's going to be –
Yeah, thanks for that. I forgot about that.
For all the overt racism this company has brought you, get ready for the awful, ham-handed, overwrought Black History Month vignettes from WWE.
So will the first picture we see when, you know, after the Now Then Forever thing comes on, will it be Martin Luther King, or will it be Harriet Tubman, or will it be, you know? Who will it be? Who do you think it'll be? Who will we see a picture of first?
I do. It won't be Barack Obama. I'll tell you.
Come on now. You notice I conveniently left that name out.
Let me tell you who it's not going to be. It's definitely not going to be him. Like Vince thinks the only like Black person who ever existed, who ever did anything good, was Dr. King. There's like nobody else ever.
I know. Maybe
Muhammad Ali. Maybe Muhammad Ali, because Vince worked with him and stuff. He might be on the good list. But remember, you know, Vince was alive back in 1968. I'm sure that Vince McMahon was calling Muhammad Ali everything but a child of God back when he was, you know, talking about the Vietnam War and all that shit. He was probably cursing him, calling the N-word and saying all the other stuff that the white folks were.
Yeah. Oh, especially when he changed his name to Muhammad Ali. You know, I'm sure that was
thing, another, like, the young people today, like people like your daughter's age would never be able to understand. Oh, people hated Muhammad Ali. But no, he's like this beloved figure. And when he died, these tributes came out. Yeah, they did. But he was awful. And he was the N-word. And he was this, that. He was ungrateful and uppity and all this other stuff back in the 60s. He didn't understand what this country had done for him back when he was saying that black people shouldn't, you know, volunteer to go fight in the Vietnam War and shit like that. And he was banned from boxing and, you know, thrown to be destitute to the streets. People, they, young people would never understand that.
Mm-mm.
They would never understand that.
But Mike Tyson can bite people's ears off, and
yes, and well, rape people too. There's always, and,
well, that too. I'm sticking to the boxing ring, but yes,
still get a payday. Still get a payday.
Still get a, and yeah, and then some.
But so yeah, Vince. Vince, the only black person in history worth lauding is Dr. King. After that, it's like fuck the rest of them. I don't give a shit. They're terrible. Oh, fuck them.
Let's throw anybody out there. I don't care. Halle Berry, put her up.
Maybe that Herman Cain guy. He's dead, man. Your hero killed him at a rally in Tulsa. God damn it. God damn it. The Democrat hoax takes another one. Vince looks incredibly old these days, by the way.
Yes, he does.
He looks incredibly ancient.
And each time we see him, he looks that much more ancient.
It's unbelievable how I guess this is God's punishment for Vince after all these years and shit. I don't know.
Yeah, well.
But just get ready for those. Those are going to be some really insanely overwrought Black History Month moments from the people that barely let anybody say anything about Black Lives Matter last summer. They eventually – didn't they let the New Day have BLM, like, armbands and shit like that?
Did they? Did he?
I couldn't – I thought there was some of that stuff that went on or whatever.
I don't remember. I don't remember seeing that.
Nice stuff from the New Day paying tribute to Brody Lee. I thought that was very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Royal Rumble. Otherwise, it was a very average Royal Rumble. I thought really not a whole lot to talk about there. Not a whole lot like, oh, God, it's WrestleMania season. Boy, this is going to be so good.
What was the one thing we were bitching about, though, during the Rumble? Remember?
No, what was it?
Between naps. You don't remember what bitching about? We were bitching about the no disqualification rule bullshit. And how they've taken it to the jump the shark level, you know?
Like Nia Jax gets eliminated, but then she can go in the ring and start beating the shit out of them. The announcers are like, well, you know, it's not.
Yeah, too bad.
They're being fed this shit by, no, once you're eliminated, you're done. You can't go in and start wreaking havoc all over the place. It's over.
Just, ugh.
I'll tell you the other rule should be, and I don't like this shit like Billy Kay was doing, like, I'll just sit out here and not go in the ring and I'll be fine. No, if you're not in the ring by the time the buzzer sounds
90 seconds, yes.
You are eliminated. You're done.
I agree. I'm with you.
That should be a fucking rule.
I agree.
That's exactly what should happen. Is you're done. If you can't get in that ring within 90 seconds, you can't, then you're done. You are eliminated from the Royal Rumble.
Everything. Well, Billy Kay has basically turned into the, you know, 2021 Santino Marella. So
that's the other thing with her is it's like they've clearly said the star of your team is Peyton Royce and you're shit. So we're going to make a storyline out of figuring out what the fuck is next for you because you're Marty Jannetty. You're Marty Jannetty with a slightly smaller.
Yeah,
basically is what's happening here. And they're like saying it to her face. You know, they're essentially like, oh, and then let's try to team you up with, you know, with Jillian Hall. Remember, I had my picture taken with Jillian a few years ago wrestling.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
She looked very different. That's all I'm going to say. She looked a little different than she did. You know, our friend Jeremy went to high school with her or something.
I know that, really.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe he did. Okay, but no, I forgot. If he did.
He didn't have very flattering things to say about her.
I'm not going to ask.
Yeah, I wasn't flattering. Just wasn't flattering at all. There's a new Untold episode on the WWE Network. It's going to be on the APA, the Acolyte Protection Agency. It's going to debut Sunday, February the 7th.
Damn.
Also, Sasha Banks on Broken Skull Sessions with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Let's see when that's going to happen.
By the way, let's see how many people watch that.
One of your favorites, Grits Gresham, has signed a new contract with ROH.
Good for Grits.
Good old Grits. He's Stone Ground. That should be his finishing move. Stone Ground! Stone Ground! Stone Ground!
Stone Ground, Grits Gresham.
God damn, that's what it should be. That joke is only funny to us. in an advertisement for the new WWE Network programming, it was revealed that Banks is appearing on an upcoming episode of Broken Skull Sessions. The episode has already been filmed. The premiere date has not been revealed. Banks will be the second ever woman to appear on Broken Skull Sessions. The first one was?
Bailey?
That's correct. The Undertaker, Goldberg, Kane, Big Show, Bret Hart, Ric Flair, Mark Henry, Jerry Lawler, Kurt Angle, Drew McIntyre, and Bailey have all been interviewed by Austin on previous Broken Skull Sessions. The Undertaker appears on the show twice. A lot of people are speculating that with the move from the network over to Peacock, there's going to be less of an emphasis on original programming on the network. Do you feel that that's going to be part of the deal?
I would have thought there would be more emphasis on it.
I don't know. It seems like, and I don't know, again, I'm not one of your big-time media players. The idea.
No, don't kid yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I won't kid myself. Well, the point of that, the idea would be that we want, from a Peacock point of view, is we want the WWE eyeballs over here, and then they will start to consume some of our over-programming. But really, the point of all of that is that so that Universal Comcast can just show, hey, we've got X number of subscribers. That's what they do every quarter. And this will help that number. That's basically what it is.
Yeah.
But the strategy is that, yes, we want these fans to also be fans of other stuff. And then they'll like the other things and consume all of them. And that's going to help with our numbers overall that we can present to the Wall Street guys. Hey, we were streaming X number of hours over here, but now we're streaming way more. And then Wall Street's going to go, well, it's just the WWE guys. And they'll go, no. They're also looking at all the episodes of Superstore and all the episodes of Mr. Mayor with Ted Danson. And they're looking at, you know, shit like that. That's what they're hoping for.
Yeah. I'm sure that will happen. Don't you? I mean, it's.
I would hope so.
Here's my question. How are pay-per-views going to work now?
It's going to be the same thing. I think remember the idea before the pandemic hit was Vince was like, yeah, we might sell some of the bigger events and make people, we might let that go to the Fight Network or Amazon or somebody else to make you pay $50 or $60 like you used to for WrestleMania or SummerSlam or Survivor Series or Royal Rumble. But then the pandemic hit and it was like, oh shit, we can't really do that because everybody's broke. Now I think everything's going to be locked in for 4 years on this Peacock thing.
So you think nothing's going to change pay-per-view-wise for 4 years?
I don't think so. I think everything's going to be status quo. After that, they can revisit the idea of, well, let's put it on the Fight Network for $50 or let's do traditional pay-per-view or let's put it on Amazon Prime or let's do it on Vudu or one of those other apps and see if we can get people to pay $50 or $60 for WrestleMania and let's twist again like we did last summer. Yeah. That kind of situation.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I feel like everything's going to be locked in place. And then 4 years from now, they can reassess this deal with Universal or, you know, at some point, maybe some other app is like, I don't think it'll be Disney Plus, but one of those other apps that are like CBS All Access will go, maybe we can migrate you guys over here and do kind of the same thing for our app the way that you guys did for Peacock. You know, or Peacock goes, well, you did prove some value, so we're going to pay you a little bit more money for another 4 years of leasing your stuff and moving all your stuff over here.
Now, do we know this? Are all the archive stuff going to – is it going over there everything. Too? Everything.
The okay. entire WWE network is going over to Peacock.
Okay, well, that's good. I don't know. Just making sure.
Everything you see now under that one icon, all that stuff's migrating, and that's how you're going to be able to see it is over at Peacock. But there's going to be a couple of apps, obviously, that will be able to use the eyeball, like HBO Max. HBO Max could very well say, we'd like to have you guys over here, and we'll pay you $1.2 billion or $1.5 billion or whatever after this deal with the Peacock's over, and you can migrate your shit over here, and it'll be the same kind of situation.
So how, like, how are WWE subscribe network subscribers going to migrate over there? Were there? I wonder how that works. That seems very complicated to me.
We're supposed to be getting an email. We're supposed to be getting some sort of email.
Okay.
And they'll figure it all out. They're just geniuses.
Okay. Well, yeah, of course they are. I never questioned that.
If there's any question that they're geniuses, just recall to the first week that they launched the WWE Network and just how things.
Oh, that was so lovely stuff, man.
There was no problem whatsoever.
Oh.
Remember, they were working with some of the best. They were working with Major League Baseball Advanced Media, MLBAM.
Theoretically.
I think they were working with Amazon Web Services. I mean, they were working with some of the biggest, and it still was fucked up.
It was horrible. I remember that.
It was jacked up beyond, and it's around day four or five, you eventually got to see some of the shit that you needed and wanted to see.
Yeah, yeah.
But since then, everything's been groovy, baby.
Yeah, and they finally did work out the kinks, for sure.
It got good, and then, you know, and the reiterations and all of the updates and stuff, it's been pretty good. Yeah, say that. So there've been some speculation there will be less of an emphasis on. But I would think if I'm Peacock, I'm like, I kind of want you guys to have more original programming, and that's going to be part of the deal. That's going to be built into the shit ton of money that we're paying to you up in Stamford. Is that you need to deliver? And I don't know if there's X number of hours of original programming per month or per year or whatever, but there should be some sort of metric by which, hey, we're still going to want original programming for you guys in addition to the pay-per-view stuff and all that shit.
It shouldn't be that hard. I mean, it's just keep doing what they're doing now,
Essentially, right? I think that's what I would want if I'm the Peacock guys. But I don't know. Again, you don't know from the point of view of how many people are really familiar with the programming and the culture of what's going on the WWE Network. But I'm telling you, that's why they got that Nick Khan guy in there, is to seal up a deal like this.
That makes sense.
That's why you need that guy. Speaking of original programming, in addition to the Bianca Belair thing, fantastic debut of the Icon series, which features Yokozuna.
I saw a little bit of that last night, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that they did a fantastic job with that. They've got a post-game show on there with that Matt Camp guy interviewing Bret Hart and talking to Rikishi about Yokozuna. Cornette appears on the Yokozuna thing, obviously, because he helped manage Yokozuna. And he said something that was fairly amazing. You remember the way that it worked under Vince's dad, they would mostly have babyface champions. Bruno being the one, Backlund being another one. And then you would only have a heel champ as a transition guy. You'd have Ivan Koloff as the transition guy to maybe Pedro Morales or somebody like that. Or you would have Iron Sheik as the guy between Backlund and Hulk, right?
Yeah, they just wouldn't hold on for very long.
And he said, Cornette said, and this is why Jim Cornette as a historian is really, really good. In the modern WWE era, Yokozuna was the longest reigning heel champion that they've had. I thought, if you think about it, that's true. I've also heard that the box office in particular and the house shows and stuff weren't all that great under Yokozuna. Now, I've also heard the same thing when Kevin Nash was champion as well for WWF.
Well, that makes sense.
But it's an excellent documentary, and it goes obviously into the Samoan roots and the Samoan heritage and going back to that, I think it was WrestleMania 9 that was in Las Vegas, and how every Samoan within a 20-country radius was driving hard to the hoop. Yoko wins the title from Bret Hart, but then Hulk Hogan comes in and steals it 5 seconds later, and I don't understand how bloodshed didn't happen there at Caesar's Palace, but it didn't. And it reminded me of a few years ago when they were actually in the San Francisco area for that WrestleMania, and Roman Reigns was in that three-way. Seth Rollins, well, eventually turned into a three-way because Seth Rollins ends up cashing in when he was.
Yeah.
It was Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns. And then,
yeah.
From what I heard, some of the Samoans in attendance had not been wise, had not been smartened up to the finish of that match. And they were a little upset. There was, the briefest of security issues. They're ringside.
Oh, my God.
I said to you, well, that's how the Samoans got to end up getting into the business in the first place, because they were up at the Cow Palace and they were beating the shit out of the heels. And Roy Shire's like, oh, no, no, fuck this. We got to smarten them up and get them into the business. Which he did. Which he eventually did. And that's how Afa and Sika and the whole Hee-Haw gang ended up getting into the business.
Yeah.
Because they were taking things a little too seriously, and I can't have you guys making my heels look like shit. I'm going to have to start getting you in and booking you. So you can understand that this is a work. So, yeah, that Icons is really good. And then do watch the post game on that. It's really good. The other stuff that I was watching a lot of was some of 2012 WWE with CM Punk on top and stuff, and the build up to WrestleMania back then. So that was very, very good.
Yeah, I kind of came across a CM Punk. I don't even know what it was on. I never heard another person speak on whatever he was doing. I don't know if it was the Colt Cabana podcast or what, but I just, you know how you're on, was it on Facebook? I think it was on Facebook. Yeah. Now that video page or whatever, and I'm scrolling down, and it just, I just happened to stop on. I didn't even see what the headline was, and I just heard CM Punk's voice. So I just stopped for a second, started listening, and he was talking about having to lose to Rock and at WrestleMania, and he just had a problem. You know, the whole problem he had with that, because Rock was going to go back and be a movie star, and he was the one, and CM Punk was the one that's going to have to stay. And Vince was trying to convince him that, you know, that was going to make him a super heel. You know, he was going to be a superstar for losing to The Rock. You know, and
right?
He just didn't buy that shit. So yeah, so I couldn't remember. Do you remember? Is that from the Colt Cabana thing? Do you remember?
Well, that's one of the list of complaints was that these guys would come out of retirement, they would beat him, and then they would just go away.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes him look like a big ass chump, you know? It doesn't really help him out. It had Triple H unretired, beat him, then retired, making Punk look like he can't get his win back. He can't do anything.
Yeah, God,
that would just happen, you know?
That's so Triple H. That's such a Triple H move.
Very much a Paul Levesque kind of situation for sure.
Mm.
And those are the things that happened. Are you excited about Seth Rollins being back?
I am, and I'll tell you why. I'm hoping that they've rebooted him a little bit so I can like him again.
Burn it down.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I don't know what they need to do, but burn make it to where I like him again, because I like Seth Rollins. I want to like him. I want to watch him. I don't want to see him coming on my screen and go, oh, you know. So, like, kind of like Randy Orton, and you know, here's the thing about Randy Orton. I don't know about you, but right after Alexa threw that fire in his face, and he wore that mask, I guess it was a week ago or whatever on Raw. Yeah, I like Randy Orton in the mask. I think Randy Orton needs to wear a mask all the time.
And Randy Orton under hood is a good paint of coat, as Bruce Pritchard would say.
A paint of coat, yes.
Paint a coat to put on that character.
Yeah. But, I mean, it would kind of be like what was Dusty's name?
Midnight Rider.
Yeah, something like that. Well, you know it's Randy, but he wears a mask just because.
Jimmy Valiant's friend, Charlie Brown from Out of Town.
And let's not forget what was the fucking Flair one?
The Scorpion. The Black Scorpion.
The Black Scorpion. Yes.
Boy, they fucked that one up 10 ways to Sunday. Holy shit, did they ever do that?
Oh yeah.
Bob Armstrong and the Bullet, man.
Yeah, there you go. There's so many of them. That's what I'm saying. That would have been so good. That would have been so good. Randy Orton in a mask.
Randy Orton annoys me every time I see him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, that might help.
I don't know what else to say about that guy. I don't know if there's anything else you can do to that guy.
I want to like him too, but he makes it so hard.
And I'm not sure. I don't know what the Monday Night Messiah thing was. It working for you with Seth Rollins?
It just, something wasn't right about it. I don't know. It was annoying, I guess. It annoyed me. He wasn't a fun heel to watch. He was an annoying heel, and I don't like annoying heels.
It's funny, like ever since they broke up the Shield, they struggled to figure out what to do with those guys. And Rollins probably figured out his direction faster than the other guys. And eventually they listened and they did exactly what they should have done with Roman Reigns from the beginning and turned him heel. And now he's the best he's ever been.
Exactly.
And then it took Mox going away before he could actually turn out to be, he's number one on the PWI thing and all that shit.
Yeah, yeah. So what does that tell you?
I don't know. He was the champion for a while and he's hot as a pistol. They finally cooled him off by taking the title off of him.
But has he really cooled off that much? I mean, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think he's still as high as he ever was for that promotion. The MVPs for that promotion of 2020 to me were Jericho and him. And you could, if somebody told me he was one and Jericho was two, I wouldn't fight it.
Yeah, it's hard. It really is hard to put one and two on either one of those dudes.
I tell you who came on strong at the end was Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston for the last 4 months of that, or the last third of the year anyway, he was huge in that promotion.
Man, yeah.
He was as hot as anybody in that promotion.
I love Eddie Kingston, man.
Oh, that guy's kicking ass and taking names.
Have we heard when NWA is starting back up again? Speaking of Eddie Kingston.
I have not heard anything about what's happening with NWA Power and Billy Corgan and all that good shit.
Because what made that was the Mid-Atlantic wrestling type atmosphere with the fans right there. So I don't know how that's going to pan out with no fans there.
On 411 Mania, Tim Storm talked about Billy Corgan's passion for the business in NWA Power's debut. All right. Let's see what that's about. Let's go down that wormhole. I remember how hot Tim Storm was there for a minute. That was
fantastic. He was, yeah,
that
for
was
a hot
so
minute.
Much fun to watch that show for half a second, right?
Mama Storm, yeah.
Oh, all that shit was wonderful. No, I don't think there's anything.
Question mark.
I still don't think we have anything about when the NWA is going to be coming back.
Yeah, I just don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, I guess they could, just don't have an audience, but that was part of the repertoire, you know?
Well, let's be honest. NWA lost it all when they fired Cornette. That was the end of that promotion.
Yeah.
It does seem like they lost a step. It does seem like they kind of lost a step, honestly.
Well, they probably did. They probably did. I'm trying to think when he got – did anybody come in after him, do you remember, like big?
Not really.
After Cornette left? I don't remember.
No, they used – didn't they use Stu? It's like their guy. It's like their – wasn't he – wasn't
That's
Stu
right. He did. Stu came in for a minute. I don't think he's coming back now since he's, happy as a lark seemingly up there with NXT again.
The NWA World's Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis recently spoke about his current plans for the return of NWA Power. The show is set to return in 2021 following a break due to coronavirus. However, during a recent interview with the Wrestling's Cool podcast, Nick Aldis gave a hint at those plans, saying he was conservatively guessing that things would be back for the spring, Brian. Back for the spring.
Conservatively to spring. Okay.
No, theoretically, spring begins on March 21st.
Right.
So we could be 7 weeks away. I don't know.
Gosh, that's so slow. So much can goddamn happen in 7 weeks.
Here's the quote. Depends on when we start up again. I would conservatively guessing that we will be ready to do Power again by the spring. You're right. Things can happen very quickly in the next 7 weeks. Joe Biden could have this country in the hands of Hugo Chavez within 7 weeks.
I'm sure the power transition's in play now as we speak.
Well, Hugo's been dead for 7 years, but
it doesn't matter.
It didn't stop him from being blamed on stealing the election for some reason. I don't know. He's good though. If you can steal elections from beyond the grave, that's pretty good.
That's talent.
Depends on when we start up. Power. I would conservatively be guessing we'll be ready to do Power again by the spring. So I do know who I – and it's not up to me. I have obviously a fairly significant amount of influence, but I do know who I would like to see on the show. And there's a few guys who I've reached out to.
And who's this, Nick? We're talking about Nick here?
Yes. I've talked to Billy Corgan and Pat Kenny. I did not know Simon Diamond was Pat Kenny and that he had some sort of say in the National Wrestling Alliance.
Really? I didn't know that. Simon Diamond is Pat Kenny?
Yeah. That's weird.
I didn't know that.
said, look, I've got this idea for this guy, but I'm reluctant to say too much because, one, given our track record of getting guys over and recognizing talent, the second I say their name, someone else is going to try and sign them. Hi, I'm Ricky Starks. Have we met?
How are you doing?
And two, because who knows what's going to happen with them between now and the spring. Some of them may end up signing a contract somewhere else. So I don't want to – I just don't want that attention to go there. Okay.
Well, I've heard Zicky Dice is going to be coming – is supposedly coming to AEW if he hasn't already. And so there you go. You got that, and then you got
Jeff Cobb and Jacob Fatu are just dying for you guys to fucking sign these guys.
Please. Holy God shit. Dang.
It's unbelievable how you guys – they're just out there. They used Jeff Cobb for a fart on fucking AEW Dynamite, and they just ruined it.
Yeah. What was that?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know what these people are thinking sometimes. It just it's bothersome and troublesome to me. But anyway, there's a documentary on Amazon Prime about QT Marshall, and they go to the Monster Factory in New Jersey, and they have a few of the stars of today that you're going to see. You'll see Matt Riddle, and you'll see Damian Priest, both of the Monster Factory up there.
Punishment Martinez at the time, probably.
Correct. And you do respect the QT Marshall work ethic. That's fine. I don't entirely understand what the deal is with him. I also don't understand how this John Silver character is getting over, but
yeah, where did he come from?
I don't know, but I guess we're all on board. So let's just get on board. And no, I don't know who the new leader of the Dark Order is going to be, but they got to figure out something with that too. I guess.
I'm surprised they would. I thought they might just disband the Dark. That was a good reason right there to disband the Dark Order.
Let's just go. Let's just cash this one in, right?
If there's ever a reason, a good reason to do it, this was the ultimate good reason to do it. Not a good circumstances reason, but if you're going to think of a reason to disband them, this is it.
There's going to be some historical, you know, shenanigans. That shit was not getting over. I love Brody Lee. I thought he was great. I love John Huber. That's great. That shit was not getting over worth a damn.
And God bless him, he did give it a little bit of a booster shot.
Oh, without him, I can't even imagine the drizzling shits that whole thing.
Oh, yeah. To be
fair, to be completely fair, he almost saved that shit.
Yeah,
honestly. Yeah.
Well, he made him more legit, you know.
He did something to it because
he definitely made it. I thought he made him more legit.
Oh, it's crap without him. It wasn't that. I mean, he barely brought it up to treading water. But oh,
well, that was a tough task for anybody to try to make that shit into some gold.
Any other closing thoughts as we wrap up another award-winning episode of Katie Vick is Alive Alive?
Closing thoughts, my favorite part, because I can never think of only because I can never think of any closing thoughts. I never have any prepared. And then when we sign off, I'm like, you know, I did have a closing thought. No, I think we're good.
The best to the family of Dustin Diamond, who played Screech.
Yeah, man.
At the age of 44, dies of lung cancer. Very sad.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize he was that heavy of a smoker. Was that what it was? I don't know. That's weird.
It was very sad. Bryant can be followed on social media. He's pretty good at it. Bryce Sports on Twitter and Instagram. What's the TikTok?
Stanley Jackson 23.
Stanley Jackson 23. I am on Twitter at Britt Whitmire. The show is on Twitter at Katie Vick Alive. I'm on Instagram at BDub4Reels, BDUB number 4 REELZ. If you like what we do, you like to support us, make sure you check out our Amazon store. It does not change the price of the stuff that you buy, but it helps us out. Wait a minute. Hang on. Let me try this again. It's katievick.com. KatieVick.com is where you want to go for that. I appreciate all of your support, as always. Until next time, fans, we'll see you ringside.
Fans, that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.